one was pretty much like the other. It made less money as a woman, though, and as a gay prostitute, it ate at better restaurants, and the other man still picked up the bill. The 70s and 80s were good for the stock market, at least for conservative investors, and all of the money the chameleon made from sex and extortion went straight to its broker. After the first million, it became a broker itself, handling its various identities under yet another false one. It didn't have a plan, in the sense of ambition. It watched its various fortunes grow and shrink and grow again like a horticulturalist tending a garden, fertilizing in one season and pruning in the next. It slowly became the richest creature in the world, though the wealth was scattered among 100 identities and 1,000 accounts. It started 2 small wars as experiments and profited from both, though not as well as it did in drugs and dot-coms. It left dot-coms a year before they tanked, but then, instead of pushing its advantage, left the money to marinate for a year or decade or two. Something would come along. Maybe money could accomplish what research had not, finding another one like himself. Humans were no challenge to kill. Chapter 32. Melbourne, Australia, 1997. The changeling settled into the Gippsland campus of Monash University in 1997 and spent 4 years earning a double degree in marine biology and biotechnology. It enjoyed Melbourne, but often spent its free time in the water, being a subject as well as a student of marine biology and enjoying fresher fish than any sushi chef could offer. Its academic performance was flawless, Monash being no more difficult than Harvard or MIT, and it accepted a full scholarship to James Cook University in Queensland, where it spent 4 years getting its MS and PhD in marine biology, specializing, naturally enough, in the behavior of marine animals. It took its fresh doctorate to Ames, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, where it began researching wonky holes, the fisherman's name for muddy holes that foul trawling nets near reefs. Many kilometers offshore, they turned out to be fresh water percolating from subterranean streams, a natural process that was having an unnatural effect on the reefs because the water carried nutrients from farms, which fed algae, attracting fish. Fishermen kept the locations of wonky holes secret because they attracted schools of fish. An easy day's catch was worth the occasional fouled net. Investigating this phenomenon gave the changeling its first opportunity to see itself as a great white shark. Ames was using underwater video cams to monitor fish populations, and one weekend the changeling went out to visit a camera site. It grabbed the bait box, used to attract smaller fish, in its powerful jaws and crunched it flat, thrashing around in a natural reaction to the strange metallic flavor. It made for some great footage, which had gone all over the oceanographer's world by the time the changeling had turned back into a human and returned to the lab. "Ugly customer," it said when it saw the tape, to predictable response. "No, it's beautiful, can't you see? It's just being a shark." Actually, it was engaging in un-shark-like behavior at the time, analyzing the differences in the ocean's flavor around the wonky holes, slightly acidic fresh water. Bad for coral in the long run, though in the short run it was like an all-you-can-eat buffet for the small creatures that fed on algae and plankton, and the larger ones that fed on them, and on up the food chain to the fisher folk who cursed the wonky holes for mucking up their nets, but kept returning. In the long run, though, the wonky holes were one of several interlocking factors that were destroying the offshore parts of the Great Barrier Reef, which was bad for tourism as well as fishing. The changeling made them his specialty, and being a part-time shark gave him a huge advantage over other researchers. He could smell out wonky holes in the early stages of development before they had attracted enough fish to draw the attention of humans. So he did productive analysis in reverse. He found relationships between fishing patterns near the shore and the formation of wonky holes, and scientifically predicted where to find the small ones. This eventually led to a selective reforestation program. The excess percolation of fresh water was indirectly caused by the absence of trees, which would normally store large quantities of water after a rainfall to harmlessly evaporate back.